This is the January 21st meeting of the Governance Committee of the Pacifica National Board. I'm George Ryder, the chair. I'll ask our secretary, Colleen O'Brien, she would call the roll.
Ken Aaron. Sharam Agamir. Carolyn Burden. Lydia Brazon.
Here.
Bill Crozier.
Here.
Kathy Davis, Sasha Futron, Joseph Kay, Lizette King, Bob Letter,
here.
R. Paul Martin,
here.
Brenda Medina,
present.
Colleen O'Brien, here. Marcel Reed, here. George Ryder,
here.
Tracy Rosenberg,
here.
John Winger.
Okay, that's nine altogether. We needed eight. So we have a quorum. The only item on the agenda is the suggestion from the National Election Supervisor on changing our procedures, which clearly would be a bylaws amendment. Are there any, and I put that up for discussion. I'm not necessarily a proponent, but I thought it was worth at least talking about. Is there any other suggestions for what you'd like to have on the agenda? Okay. Well, hearing done, then that would be the only item there.
Point of order.
Yep,
Chair.
Go ahead. Yep.
I mean, we haven't voted that it's in there, and I'd like to. If we're going to seriously consider that thing, I'd like to argue against putting it on the agenda at all.
So you'd like to take off? You'd like to take it off the agenda?
Well, who's putting it on? So you're making a motion to approve the agenda with the one item being this this proposal.
Yes.
All right. I would argue against that because it's a silly idea to just. I mean, it looks to me like what he's saying is draw lots. You know, and I think if we do that, we're bailing out on everything. And that'll be the end of Pacifica if we start doing that stuff. So I would say leave that off the agenda. If there's nothing else to do, then there's nothing else to do.
This is Lydia.
Lydia, good.
Marcel to the stack.
Lydia and then Marcel.
I think we could just call the agenda item possible alternatives to our current election process. So that it's not limited to what Terry had said, but we start bouncing around ideas only because in the hallways and byways of all of Pacifica, people have raised the possibility of alternatives to problems inherent in what we're doing, blah, blah, or how we're doing it. I have my idea, same thing. I'm not supporting Terry's proposal, but everybody's talking about it, so why not have that issue right now would be the timeliest because we just came out of it. But I would also like to move to have a time certain of 10:30.
We always have a time certain of 10:30.
Okay.
And so you're suggesting we should discuss it in the broader context of possible alternatives to our election.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
That could be one of it, but it could be a point of discussion, but that's certainly not all. Okay.
That was pretty much my intention as putting it on there. Marcel, would you want to speak to it? The question of whether to keep it on the agenda?
Absolutely. I would like to keep it on the agenda and the broader discussion of the elections in general. And when it comes up, I'll discuss it a little further. But also, I think for people listening in on the stream, you might want to read Terry or make a summation of Terry's motion so the people will know what we're talking about if they're listening in.
You want me to do that now before we put it on the agenda or when
I'm suggesting once we're on there, you might want to read it.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak to the question of whether to consider this these suggestions for changes to election procedure?
Yeah, or Paul for a second. If we want to discuss alternatives, period, I'll be okay with that. But if the sole item was this sortition thing, then I would be against that. But, you know, all various alternatives, I'll live with.
Okay. So what I hear is that if we frame it that way, that there's no objection, or I haven't heard any other objection to keeping it on the agenda and having the discussion. Is there any objection to alternatives to our election procedure being a discussion item? Okay, good. So is there any other objection to the agenda? Okay, hearing none then. I'm sorry, go ahead. So the agenda is approved. The first item is approval of minutes, but we had decided that we wouldn't try to approve minutes if we hadn't seen them a week in advance. So they've been circulated and they'll be available for approving at the next meeting. I believe I was supposed to do the minutes of the November meeting, and I don't find them on my computer. And I don't know whether they exist. Did anybody ever get minutes of the November meeting that you remember? Okay, well, I'll go back and make sure that those actually get done. I have posted the ones that we've had, that I knew we had from the past meetings, are up on KPFTX now where they're supposed to be. The only other thing I have to report is that the motion we put forward to define what it meant to be a listener in good standing for the purposes of running for the board was tabled. We'll probably come back up at the next PMB meeting. So let me take Marcel's suggestion and describe what's in Terry's proposal. I would just as soon not read the whole thing. It's rather long, but the basic idea is to, and the intention, I mean, clearly stated intention is that to get beyond the kind of factionalism and cost of our election procedure as it is, and he describes some of the factionalism, at least, to the procedure itself, that he also talks about wanting to bring in people who maybe would be quite good board members, but they're not comfortable in putting themselves forward as a candidacy in a competitive election. And so he suggests something called sortition, which in the form that he suggested, basically you pick people by random from the membership. And the idea there is that you try to get a random sample sufficiently large that the sample actually is representative of the membership as a whole. And then you give them the task of finding the board members. He was suggesting a group of 100, and they would work over, and it wasn't completely clear over what period of time, but clearly it would be some time, and they would presumably do interviews and encourage people to run and so on and so forth. That's it. I may have missed some piece of it, but that was basically the idea. Anybody else want to fill in a blank that I may have left out about that? No. Okay, so the whole topic of what should we do about our election process, possible alternatives, is on the floor, with that being one of them. Anyone want to speak to that issue?
Yes. Marcel?
Okay, Marcel. Yeah.
Okay.
And then Lydia to check.
Okay.
And then Lydia?
Well,
okay, go ahead.
I was against election this cycle, and it certainly weighs heavily on us here at WPFW. because one of the reasons that it's been so difficult for us to move is because of the state of our finances in Pacifica. And I certainly think that the elections being so frequent and so often missing quorum, especially here at W, which we met this time, but other stations haven't been able to meet, is a huge drain to turn around and again next year have elections. And I asked for some round numbers from Terry. He didn't have any exact numbers. But our election this time, he estimates, may have cost us as much as $200,000. We can't turn around and bear that again next year. So I think it's imperative that we find some way that the elections either are less occur less often and are certainly less costly.
Okay, Lydia?
Yeah, it won't be able to happen for the next election, but I was actually, and I'm opposed to his partition project for a lot of reasons, but I was actually more interested in some of the things that he said we could fix in the interim. Because if we go to an entirely new process, and I wouldn't object to that, but it would require bylaws amendments that would require membership votes, et cetera, which he acknowledges. So, but in the short term, there are things that we can do. I personally am committed to putting together a bylaws amendment that would remove the necessity of quorum, for one thing. You know, and then there are other things that he suggests in there which I think would be useful. Once you remove the quorum, then you don't have to keep paying your NES and LESs overtime, shall we say, you know, until you make quorum. And the whole point is to have people who are sufficiently interested in governance of a nonprofit and of this nonprofit in particular to run for the board. And that's part of my, you know, anyway. And so in terms of Terry's specific project or proposal, rather, is number one, he makes a lot of broad, what I believe to be erroneous assumptions, which is that the elections are what gave birth to the factionalism, and those of us that have been around a long time know very well that the alliances and factions have been, you know, certainly predate the election. And what else? And also, you know, that some of us didn't come out of the election. He's kind of assuming that if you want to preserve this, it's because you won your position on the board as a result of elections. That's not true. I was on the lab before, and I ran as an independent in the first election. So, you know, he's made some kind of faulty assumptions. But what is true is that we can't afford these elections as constituted. I personally favor, for example, having the PMB relate to the number of listeners that we have. So a very small station. Why do they have so many directors and blah, blah, blah? I'm less so in terms of the local boards, because I think the diversity can be sustained at a local board. It doesn't cost us travel money for the in-person meetings, blah, blah. Anyway, so, but just to do the random sorting, it's going to be the same volunteers from the same, you know, faction are going to volunteer to be these people. And so as random as you think you're going to make it, you're still going to draw from the same pool, and then you still have to have equivalent of election supervisors and local election supervisors. He calls them a different name, but it's the same thing, so you still have to pay them. And you would, in terms of whoever loses is going to be a sore loser and call the election faulty and will still sue. So, and you have California Corporations Code. The nature of what he presented may fall under elections, whether he wants to call them that or not. So anyway, so it's too many things that I had problems specifically with Terry's, but I think it's the beginning of a dialogue that we have to have.
Anyone else want to speak to this?
Yeah, John Langer.
John, good.
Yeah, I just got on the call and heard just the last two speakers. But I have a fundamental objection. I agree with Lydia. that we need to have a dialogue. And I certainly agree with the first speaker that we need to reduce our costs. But I think that the fundamental problem with this proposal is that it basically says it's another way for the listeners to give their power away to somebody else. And they may be using a random mechanism instead of a popularity contest, but it's still giving their power away. And I would like to see us begin to explore the role of people retaining their power and voting directly with direct democracy. Direct democracy was taken away from us in the Constitutional Convention in America so that rich white people could preserve their power and not share it with those poor white people and brown people, et cetera. And I think now we have the technology to do things directly, and we could explore that. And this is a far more fertile area. So that's my first, most fundamental objection. The second thing is that we really need to have openness and transparency with regard to the reporting of these financial costs. I mean, $200,000, yeah, maybe, you know, that's an interesting assertion, but, you know, where's the data? And why haven't we seen the data on a weekly basis? Why is this data kept secret? Why has it not been provided, you know, just continually, like here, so that, you know, it should be daily. There's no reason this data cannot be presented in almost a real-time fashion. And so that's point two. And the third point is, at least at KPFK, our station did not support the election adequately at all. We put everything else in front of the prioritization of the publicity for the election. That is to say, during fundraise, we did fundraising and we didn't mention the election. Why we couldn't have mentioned it 1 minute on the hour is a mystery. It's beyond me, but we didn't do it. And then we covered the national election, and we didn't mention our election at all. And then we had all these extra fundraisers for WBAI and our own archives upstairs, et cetera, et cetera. And these are all good things, but there's no reason we couldn't have had continual inserted reminders of the election coverage throughout. It was just at KPFK. It was done in such a way that we just didn't even try. And so we only have to blame our own management for this, and it's absolutely disgusting. So those are my 3 points, and I'm done for now.
Anyone else want to speak?
Bill?
Yeah, this is Tracy.
Bill and then Tracy.
Okay.
I'm sorry, well, should I go ahead, George?
I heard Bill first, and then you, Tracy.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Yeah, this is something probably nobody on this call is going to want to hear, because it's, you know, those of us involved in governance think this is important. But most of our listeners couldn't care less about our elections. And, you know, we end up having to beat them over the head to get them to vote. I'm not sure what the right solution is, but I think we need to figure out what the problem is first and agree. If we can agree on what the problem is, I'm not sure we can agree, but then maybe we can work on some solutions. You know, most nonprofits, in fact, all nonprofits that I know of, don't do anything like what we do in terms of the expense on the elections. You know, most of them, if they have a Democratic election of their board members, they just mail out ballots and wait for people to send them in. And maybe a reminder email if they have emails for people. But they don't have anything like what we do with all the on-air announcements and interviews and panel discussions and things like that. So even with all the extra stuff, it's really still hard for us to get people motivated. So I think we need to think about, if we're going to continue this process, is there a better way of getting people motivated to vote and informed? Or, you know, maybe we should give up and do something different. I'm not sure what the different thing should be, but I think it is ridiculous how much we spend. And also, I think people resent the time we spend on elections, because I think it gets some people just to turn us off. And they'd be rather listening to the record of programming instead of our long election forums and things like that. So sorry for the bad news, but I think we need to kind of face reality here.
Tracy?
John to the queue?
John, but I'm going to ask for people who haven't spoken before.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So Tracy?
Well, I mean, I'll start by observing that this is the Governance Committee, not the Elections Committee. so in terms of, you know, analyzing the collection process itself and how it works, it's not really the providence of this committee. What this committee should be addressing is sort of the impact of changing the election structure on the governance of the foundation. But that said, I'd be surprised if this election costs $200,000. I suspect that's either bad accounting or that is a number of screw-ups in the process that have not been previously acknowledged. No election has ever cost $200,000. The contract with the mailing house was $73,000, and in addition to that, you paid your NES a certain amount of money, and you paid your LESs a certain amount of money. That should be it. There are no other expenses. How you get to $200,000, I can't imagine. So I think that number is inflated. Normally, the cost is between about $85 and $140, depending how you do a variety of things. Obviously, by using a company, we upped our costs somewhat over the cheapest that we've ever been able to do it in the past, and we knew that we were going to do that. But $200,000 just doesn't make any sense. Okay, the second thing is, you know, the way that we lower the cost is by moving people to online voting. The vast majority of these costs are online voting. The other is the salaries, and we may need to reconsider some of the election support stuff that we're doing, since, as Bill says, our listeners don't really appreciate it that much, from what I can see, number one. And number two, you know, we're paying people to do all this crap, to make community forums and to make on-air forums, and some of that work may not be necessary. It may be that it's just overkill and money that we're basically throwing over the side of a bridge because more people are not voting as a result, even though that's the intent. I don't know. It may also be the quality of the work that was done in this year was not the same as in previous years. I don't know the answer to that. But what I'm saying is online voting cuts our costs by one-half to one-third, right there. And the failure to implement it all of these years is really a scenario where we've been spending money unnecessarily that we don't need to spend. I voted online in at least 15 different nonprofit elections this year. It was not a big deal. There are, you know, our failure to implement it is really financially self-destructive. I think regarding Kerry's proposal that it's a nightmare, honestly, I can't imagine getting 100 people together to basically run a board search committee. I mean, for God's sakes, we have 20-person hiring committees, and they drive everybody crazy, and they get nothing done. And the process goes on forever. By the time 100 people pick a board, the term will have elapsed, and we'll be starting all over again. I see this, if that's what the NES is proposing as a solution to the problems, then I don't think the NES has a very good understanding of our system, honestly, and of what we're really dealing with. And I think what happens, because when you're the NES and the LES, you're in the middle of it, is you get so beaten down by the factionalism that you desperately look for some way to get rid of it. And A, as Lydia says, I don't think the answer is that easy. And number two, I don't think proposing this kind of huge, bureaucratic, confuzzling kind of system is going to improve anything at all. So I think Kerry's proposal should basically be thrown out with a thank you. I do think that we need to institute online voting ASAP as a cost-saving measure, and we've been late on it already, but it can't wait anymore. And secondly, I think we maybe need to reconsider what the LESs do and if we're getting our money's worth from that position in terms of what we're trying to achieve. We may be, we may not be. There may be other ways to deal with getting information to voters. Thirdly, I think we have to look at the whole business of slates and slate cards and how that is having an impact, because I think at four of our five stations, it's resulting basically in huge voter turnoff. And I think that's something that we have to pay attention to. Okay, done.
Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet? Well, I haven't, and I find myself basically in agreement with Tracy on both the question of whether this is a practical solution, which I don't think it is. I can't imagine 100 people doing anything together in any sensible way. especially selected at random. And I also think that we should be doing electronic voting. But I've watched that proposal go down on the PNB now twice, and I don't understand it. I don't understand what the resistance is. And for people who don't want to see it, perhaps it'd be a good time to say what it is. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that, I mean, the only reasons you usually get are, well, there are a few people who aren't online. And, yeah, well, you know, we could send everybody a postcard. I could say it. If you absolutely must have a in-paper ballot, send us one. But again, I don't really understand why we haven't done it beforehand. What Bill raises, I think, is really kind of crucial, which is this is a whole model of a democratically controlled network, radio stations. And, in fact, there's not that much interest amongst even our listeners in participating in that process of control. We make quorum barely by, you know, 10%. And one thing to say about that is, well, so what? So, you know, so most people aren't interested, which is, I think, what Lydia said. We'll just eliminate the quorums, and the people who are interested will make the decisions. And I suppose that's that's certainly a way out, but my impression is that even the people who do vote aren't particularly well informed about the issues. I mean, I guess what I'm really coming to is questioning the model. Is can we really run it this way democratically? I would like to see that. I'm not going to give up on that, but it seems to me that we have a problem there.
John, to you for the second time.
Anybody else who hasn't spoken yet want to speak? You there, John?
Yeah, I endorse what Bill said as well. The basic problem is that the local boards have no real power. There's no real point in being on a local board. Sure, you elect some people in January to the national board. And that's about it. And that the national board has some power. The local board has essentially no power. It can't hire anybody. All it can do is find candidates for hiring. Can't fire anybody, need concurrence from somebody else. So as a board of directors, it can do nothing. With regard to programming, our programming director has stated in an email that it's inappropriate for LSV to even talk to him about programming. And so what we have is a management that's running out of control for 12 years without a board of directors, and with two advisory boards. We have the community advisory boards, which have advisory in their names, so we know they're advisory. And we have the local station boards, which cowardly don't have advisory or directors in their name. But I presume since we have one advisory board, we must have a board of directors. And the LSV really should be a board of directors. And the bylaws specifically state that this power can be explicitly delegated by the PNB to the local boards and taken away whenever they want, because the LSBs are logically and structurally committees of the national board. But the basic problem is, why should you vote for a local board that has no power and has fought, done nothing but fight for 12 years? Well, I mean, I'm a member of governance. I mean, I believe in democracy, but I find myself asking the question, why should a person be on the local board since it has no power? It makes sense to be on the national board, but you just do that, you know, once a year. You get on once a year. So that's the basic problem. The reason we have people turning off is that they're finally figuring out. They come to local board meetings. They find out the local board doesn't get to do anything. At KPFK, we do not, as members of the local board, we do not even get advance notice of programming changes. We hear about them on the radio with the rest of the listener sponsors. So the fact is, management ignores us, and therefore, why should people run? I'm at a loss. I think what you have to do is put the listeners in charge of the democracy, to eliminate the middlemen, eliminate the representatives, go to direct democracy. When people have the power, they may exercise it, or they may not. But certainly, it makes no sense to elect representatives who have no power at all. That's why the model is broken. I agree with Bill, but that's the reason. I mean, that's the deep reason why the model is broken. It just doesn't matter.
Anyone else want to speak?
Marcel,
go ahead.
Well, I agree with the last two speakers, and I also would like to add that at W, we had 24 seats up. And I think that people, as Bill said, not only were not interested, but I've learned that too much information is exactly the same as no information. And I think people at W were just blinded by so many spots and so many people running and so much competing and so many forums and so many promises that they've never seen manifest. I mean, people make a million promises when they're running, only to find out either because they don't know or they're snookering people that they can't do the things that they say. And I think it should happen less often. I mean, they were subjected to it until November. Now they're going to turn around in June and be subjected to it again, and we're going to have to fight like the devil to make quorum. But I had two questions. If quorums are eliminated, do we have any minimum amount of people that would vote? I mean, how could we control that? Would it be 7 people, 12 people, 15 people at a station? And if we can't change all of it, I think we should certainly lengthen the amount of time that people serve. That's it.
Anyone else want to speak to that?
Arpal,
go ahead.
Yeah, we're not going to solve any of this tonight. I'm thinking, I'm not making a motion yet, but I'm thinking we might want to make a working group and refer this, the issue, the general issue, of election reform or whatever you want to call this, to a working group. That way we can get the people who are really hot on it and have their ideas on it to get together, put something together, bring it to the committee, and we'll see if it's something that should be here or if this committee should try to kick it over to the elections committee or whatever. So I'm thinking maybe a working group might be an idea, but I'm not making a motion yet. So there.
Anybody else? Well, I'd like to say something about what John raised, which I basically agree with, which is that the LSBs are sort of powerless by virtue of the bylaws and the arrangements. But that's there because of the relationship between the stations and the network, which is to say the network holds the licenses, and so it has to have some control over the managers. It has to be able to pick managers at the very least in order to fulfill its own obligation to fiduciary responsibility to itself, so to speak, means essentially that the managers respond to the executive director, who they're in contact with regularly. And although the LSB can sort of hold them up, you know, for dangle them out there on the line for being fired, they can't actually fire them. And unless we do something if the stations were independent and they had a board which actually chose the general manager, then, of course, the general manager would listen to what the board had to say. And if the board had to say something about programming, they'd listen to that, too. But in that scenario, the national organization has no control over the station, and we can't do that. So we're sort of stuck in this position because of the financial relationship between the foundation and the individual stations, and of course our attempt to try to make this a democratic organization. One solution of that is for the network to divest itself of the stations ownership and sort of treat them as affiliates and somehow become a content provider for them and for the rest of the affiliates. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that there's a real contradiction in the way we've got it set up between, what's actually happening, it isn't a contradiction, is that the management essentially ignores the LSBs and works with the executive director. So that's really what we got.
Can I respond?
Yeah, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is one way to do it, but there's another way, and I alluded to it earlier in my remarks. I don't have the bylaws open in front of me, but I distinctly recall that the PNB can delegate extra powers to the LSB. And since the LSBs are logically subcommittees of the PNB, these powers can be given and taken away at a moment's notice at a whim of the PNB. But let's suppose that they did that, for example, at KPFK. Right now, we have the powers only in the bylaws, but the PNB can give us extra powers. And if they gave the local board extra powers and turned us into a real local board of directors, basically acting as a proxy or as a manager. I mean, you know, General Motors has multiple divisions. Somebody's in charge of Saturn or Chevrolet or something. You know, they make the decisions in the Chevrolet division, and, you know, the board of directors can fire that guy and pull him out. But the point is, we could have a local board of directors, which would act as the local governing board, the local board of directors, and we should do all this stuff. And then you'd have engagement between the managers, because they would know that their local supervisors, their local board of directors, is in fact the local board of directors and not a local board of observers and complainers. And, well, they might be observers and complainers too, but, you know, they would also be directors, and they could give them orders. And this would eliminate the logical problem that you mentioned before. And the reason we don't have, the local boards don't have this power is because the PNBs don't trust. Maybe they don't trust the local boards, or maybe it's because the local boards haven't asked. I've asked my local board to ask the PNB for that power, and they just said, John, you're a blue sky, radical. That's just never going to happen. Well, okay, but it may never happen. But if you never ask, then nobody can say yes. So I would ask, on the behalf of KPFK, would the PNB, those people here, give us the power of being a local board of directors? We'd be operating as a subcommittee under the governance of the PNB, and this would give us a chance to try out governance. But we haven't even tried it, and that's my point.
What are the specific powers that you have in mind? Because it would be a bylaws violation to allow you to simply fire the general manager.
Well, we'd have to change the bylaws. Well, actually, I don't know that I want to just speak to that just now. I mean, the bylaws can be changed. I mean, we're part of governance. We propose bylaws changes. So we could amend the bylaws, or the PNB, we can propose, and the PNB could amend the bylaws to say that this power may be delegated to the local board, subject to the continual supervision of the PNB. And then when we find out that, for example, when we have a programming director who says in his emails that it's inappropriate for an LSB member to even have a conversation with the programming director about programming, then we can say, well, no, you have to do what we tell you to do. We're setting the programming policy. We want to have, these subjects covered. We tried to get our news department resurrected. We haven't had one for 5 years. I tried to get a motion back starting October 1st, the beginning of the fiscal year, to state that, we will revert to what we had before. We once had a 6-person newsroom. And what happened was, due to a financial crisis, those people were laid off. Then the manager left and somebody else came in, and they hired other people for those jobs. Now those newsroom jobs are occupied by people in the front office and some drive time personnel. So now we have a two-legged station. We have music and we have public affairs, but we don't have much news. Our programming director says, well, okay, if you want more local news, we'll give you 15 minutes of local news, but we'll take it away from the national news. So we're still being capped at 1 hour of news. And in the past, we used to have a half hour at lunchtime and headlines on the hours. We couldn't get anybody to go for this because our staff didn't want to criticize management. And so people have no
feel from the issue. We get the problem there.
Yeah. So the issue is, you know, amend the bylaws, give the LSB the ability to fire the programming director and the manager and the general manager. And that will allow the LSB to start to do something, and we can test whether or not local governance can work, because we've been waiting 12 years to begin the test.
Anyone else want to speak to this general issue?
Bill? George is kind of hinting at it too, is that, you know, how do we get to any significant changes? You know, we've all seen it's so hard to get anything but other than really minor bylaws amendments passed, approved, that it's kind of pointless to even hardly talk about this kind of stuff. Unless we can somehow get some consensus, which is really difficult in Pacifica, on what the problems are and what the solutions might be. But the other problem with, you know, giving the locals station board or whatever more control is that, as George was saying, there's legal responsibilities that the foundation has. Debts are owed by the foundation, not by the individual stations. So it would take a complete legal restructuring in order to make that work. We've already had problems the last several years with individual stations spending a lot more money than they were bringing in, and some of them are still doing that, and it's making things really serious and it's hard to resolve. You know, everybody wants to spend more money. It's real easy to come up with ways of, we want this, we want that, and it all costs money, costs staff or whatever, and there's so much resistance locally to cutting staff even when we can't pay for them. And I'm just afraid that might get worse with some of the things we've been talking about here today. I think we need to get our finances in order before we can talk about doing anything almost regarding this. So I guess that's all we'll say about that.
Anyone else want to speak to this? Well, let me say I think we have an outline of the problem, and I sense a certain despair about being able to do something about it. And I'm not sure where to go from here. But I guess one thing I would like to sort of talk about at least is, what is the origin of the factionalism? And I mean, I've come to this this board after that was sort of pretty much in place, and I see alliances persisting over the years. And I talk to the people who are involved, and I don't see fundamental issues of politics here. There certainly is some political differences, but I would think that within a radio station, you could figure out ways to sort of accommodate the differences without having to be in hard, fast opposition to whatever the other side does. I guess it would be. I guess what I'm looking for is there any thoughts about what we might do to reduce the factionalism, to get more cooperation, so that the boards could move. I'm thinking about the PMB basically, so that it could move more readily, so that ideas could really be discussed and you know, thrown around, and people would do that sort of in an ongoing basis. And I don't know if anybody wants to speak to it, but I would like to hear some thoughts about it. Does anyone want to speak to either that or anything else that they want to speak to?
Sure. Here's the solution for factionalism. We keep going the way we've been going, we'll become bankrupt, and the receiver won't have a faction. The receiver will do away with factionalism and all the election problems, and a lot of problems will go away while the receiver does some things that everyone of every stripe in Pacifica will howl about. And really, you know, this is a possibility. I mean, that is a possibility. We can yell about, you know, the next elections are going to be a pain. However, we're going to be, we should rejoice if we can complete the next elections and have another set of LSPs and a PNB for 2014. You know, I mean, I think that in terms of saying let's find out where the factionalism is, I think every adult can see what's going on. And in terms of there not being gigantic real differences among the various groups of people, I think that's true. You know, I mean, somebody will bring in something about supporting this demonstration and fill in the blank. And, you know, it just about always passes the WBAI LSP, you know. I mean, the only debate you'll get will be people posturing about it, and then it passes without objection. And so that sort of thing people have agreed on all along. It's just that you get down to things like airtime and resources. Let's just call it resources in general. And people, specific people, want resources. And they, it could be said that they may want more than they should get. And right there you start the differences. A says, I want this. B says, no, you know, I want that too. And you're wanting more than your fair share. And there's a fight. And you can have the two people and there will be a faction of two right there. And so that's the deal. We have resources and they're real resources and people want them. And, you know, even though you may agree with me on a whole list of things, you're not me and I want a resource. You want that resource, and we're going to fight over it. That's your basis. That's it.
John to the King.
And this is Lydia.
John and Lydia.
Yeah, I've never been on the PNB, so I don't know why there's factionalism on the PNB. I think I know why there's faction on the LSP. My guess is that the reason there's faction on the PNB, factionalism on the PNB, is that it inherits from the constituent bodies. That is to say, the factionalism from the local boards moves up and occupies the minds of the people on the PNB. And I'm sure the factionalism, this mental virus, moves back and forth between the PNB and the local boards. But more generally, I think there's at least one known, there are many hypotheses for why we have factionalism at the local board. Certainly our Paul is correct with regard to the competition for resources. The problem of resource allocation is an interesting problem. There's software to solve it. The Japanese use it to build better cars than Americans. You know, the problem is well understood. I despaired locally because I offered to teach some people at KPFK how to use the software to solve the resource allocation problem. No one was interested, so I just shrugged and sort of went back to my thoughts. But at least one answer is the CIA. William Colby, who was a former director of the CIA. Now, I'll probably get killed and snuffed for talking about this on an open call, but, you know, I've had a good life, so what the hell. Bill Colby, near his deathbed, was asked about the penetration of the CIA into mass media in America. And this might have been in 73, I don't remember. But, you know, it was sometime. And you can look them up. So what Bill Colby, the director of the American CIA, said is that we, the CIA, control the editorial positions of all the mass media, all the important media in America, all the major newspapers, all the TV stations, all of the radio stations, you name it, we control it. And he just boasted about it, just said it, you know, so this is what he says. So when the head of the CIA just says this, I think you have to give him the respect of listening to him and saying, well, gosh, you know, and I can believe maybe he would do it and control all these media and maybe keep it a secret. But no, he just sat out and came and said and told everybody this. Now, okay, so now how old is specific? We're 60-some years old if you use the birth of the Berkeley station as the birth of Pacifica. And KPFK is, you know, 52 or 53 years, or 10 years or so younger. And so the question is this. Now, the CIA has been criticized for missing some intelligence, but basically they're pretty powerful. And what are the chances that the CIA would fail to notice Pacifica over 60 years? Now, Pacifica, they weren't, number one, they're not that old, but as soon as they came into being, they would have noticed Pacifica. I think it's not tenable to suggest that the CIA would just have failed to notice that Pacifica existed, a network dedicated to anti-war and pro-peace kinds of things. So I just take it as an assumption that the CIA knows that Pacifica exists. Now, if they control the LA Times and the Washington Post and the New York Times, the LA Times, the San Diego Union, et cetera, and all the major networks, the TV networks, ABC, et cetera, et cetera, if they control all of them and they know the Pacifica exists, what are the chances that they haven't done something about Pacifica? They obviously have. We've been penetrated. The answer is we've been penetrated, and the factionalism is maintained at the local boards by people who, which is, say, work for the government. And it's as simple as that, and that's part of the problem.
Lydia.
Okay, in terms of the PMB and even the local board, I think if we can come up with constructive projects, certainly here, like at the LSV, if we're doing a fundraiser, it can bring the factions together, some individuals from the factions together, and they get the opportunity to work with a person from the opposite slate or whatever, and find they're not so bad, and, you know, they're both working for the common good. But there are real differences. There are people who are fiercely anti-communist on the PMB and the local board. There are people who consider themselves leftists. those are kind of irreconcilable differences. There are some of the factionalism comes for years, people who come on the board and immediately start applying for a paid position somewhere in the foundation. There's nothing illegal about that. But then they will align then with the faction that are against the faction that might be in a position to hire them and doesn't hire them, for example. That has happened repeatedly. So there are so many reasons for these variables. There are other real reasons. There are those who adhere to the that are still from 1999 when we had the lawsuits, and it was the healthy station model versus those that remain for it and have come back on the board. There are also those who are very page staff-centric and believe that's the only way you can have quality broadcasting versus those that feel we should rely more on our volunteer staff and have a greater diversity and, you know, less 5-day-a-week programming or whatever. Those are all real differences. Some of the alliances don't even make sense between stations at the PMB. So there are so many things that you can't say. I can't foresee a time. I have been in Pacifica since the 80s, or even the late 70s, actually. And I can't at a time when we would not have some of those real differences. But there are new layers. There's also, as John articulated, the kind of, you know, quote unquote, the extreme conspiracy theorists. And then you have the people who are more into health. And we have such a diverse programming, which is our strength. But some people are only in it for that particular aspect of what goes on. So if that's cut down, then there's a big cure, et cetera, et cetera. The risk of rehashing everything that divided us in the past, this is a snapshot. And within staff, you know, you have all of these regular workplace divisions where you have different factions depending on who gets promoted, who doesn't get promoted, what you're allowed to do, and the different visions about the on-air programming. Those, again, those are very divisive, real issues. They're not all artificial. And no, I don't have the answer for all of them.
Darn.
Oh, Jack.
Who's that?
Marcel.
Someone have a parrot or something here in their room?
I don't know. I don't have a bird. Okay. So when I came on the board in 2008 at W, we were not nearly, we were divided for a while, and then all of that settled down, and our division has sprung up. I used to look at other and be very grateful that it wasn't going on. So I'm extremely disappointed that it's happening in D.C. I've always seen Pacifica a different way. I've always thought of Pacifica as a network that was a brilliant organizing tool. I've always thought that all of the components for organizing are present within Pacifica, that it is a group of people that can mobilize people very quickly to do organizing. I come out of organizing, and so I immediately see Pacifica as a brilliant organizing tool, which is the way I always describe it to people at our local station. And it took people a while to catch on, but I mean, the principles of organizing are commonality, a community that you can move quickly, a unifying message, and a way to keep these people together even when they're not participating in a particular activity at a particular time. And there's no smarter way to do that than to program around things that people who are prone to be activists will listen to. You can keep them constantly engaged. You can mobilize them at little or no effort. You can direct them to things that you want them to work on. And I figured this out, and other people have figured it out as I've talked to them over the years. It's no reason to believe that people in power don't know about this, so they keep us constantly confused. And there's an old saying I brought from another group I was in, and it is, the smaller the division, the more fierce the fight. And I think sometimes of what I look at are these small divisions that bring out these fierce battles. It's almost as though we expend all of our energy fighting about nothing. And then when it's time to fight about something, we'll be so divided that we can't unite and move agendas forward. So maybe I'm the only one who sees Pacifica that way, but I see Pacifica as a way to move agendas forward, to mobilize large amounts of people scattered throughout the country. And I think that is the reason, the basis, why we have so much trouble. I don't know whether it's COINTELPRO or whatever people want to call it, but I really do see that as the basic problem within Pacifica.
John, what you?
I'm sorry? John,
yeah, John is.
Yeah, I'll put you on, but let me see if there's anyone else that wants to speak to you.
Sure.
Anyone else who hasn't spoken?
Hi, this is Sasha. I just joined a few minutes ago.
Okay, Sasha. Did you want to speak, or did you just want to let us know you were here?
Well, Bo, I wanted to ask what, you know, I just heard one person speaking, so is what we're talking about our vision of Pacifica?
We haven't actually got there yet. We were talking about, started talking about ways to change the election process. We got into talking about the factionalization and what's that due to. I would think if you want, and what you just heard Marcel, and certainly there is a sort of vision of you know, what she sees Pacifica doing.
I'd like to
if you want.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Now we can't hear you. I don't know what happened.
Okay, can you hear me now?
We can.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to address that, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. Okay. Hello?
Yeah, good.
Should I go ahead? Okay, sorry. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything that Marcel said. I see this as an organizing tool. But I'm also coming at it from sort of maybe one step back, in that I think it's in terms of our offering news, information, voices, opinions that aren't heard elsewhere in the media, I think that's a part of what we are as well. And since, you know, my own background is more with journalism, I want us to be journalistically sound. And while I think it's important to have all the community voices and opinions, et cetera, I think also it really needs to be good radio, because it's not going to be an organizing tool, I don't think, if a significant number of people aren't listening. So the listenability is to me of really as important, because it really doesn't matter if you get, you know, people expressing ideas that aren't expressed elsewhere, giving us news that isn't available elsewhere, but it's not done in a listenable form, no one will be listening. No much, you know, not very many people will be listening. So I think that component is really very important. So I just wanted to throw that in there. I think the elections are horribly disruptive. I'm not sure I see the solution suggested by Terry as one that's at all workable either, though, so I'm sort of at a loss. And that's it.
Okay. Anyone else who hasn't spoken would like to speak? Anyone who hasn't spoken more than twice would like to speak? Okay. John, you're it.
Yeah, I agree with Marcel's comment. I heard the variation of the same comment when I was in graduate school. It was something like, somebody wants to ask why the political fighting in graduate schools is so fierce, or just in general, why academic infighting is so fierce and nasty. And the answer is because they're fighting over such little things. It was interesting. Later on, I worked for an aerospace company, and I found everybody was nicer. And that's because we all had $10,000 workstations on our desk. We weren't fighting for little PCs. We were fighting for bigger deals. The Republicans fight over billions, but since they're fighting over billions, they all have millions, and so they're all pretty comfortable. And if they lose, they live a good life. So the reason that we fight so severely on Pacifica is because, especially on the local boards, is because the local boards have no power. So we're really fighting over the tiniest little bits of things you can imagine. Give us more power, and the fighting it won't go away, but it'll be less fierce and less nasty, because we'll be fighting for more meaningful things and not just our respect. I'm done.
Anyone else want to speak to any of the issues?
George, this is Lydia.
Brenda?
Let me let her go first. She hasn't spoken before, and then Lydia.
So there's a lot of discussion going on. And I wanted to go to a couple points back. Can I speak?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the elections for reaching quorum, I know some people mentioned online voting. I would only be in favor of that at first for the staff elections, because for the listener elections, at least for this upcoming year, I don't think it's feasible. We need to be informing folks a little bit more ahead of time, at least for the general listener election, because that's something that may get a big backlash. I mean, I do know that, you know, a lot, at least at K, we are getting emails as part of the new fund, about the more recent fundraise, of getting emails from folks, but knowing that a lot of people may retire emails and things like that is always something to keep in mind. In terms of the LSB having more power, I think one of the ways and which we can prove that we have a little bit more unity with our management is through, I don't recall lately, but in terms of the bylaws amendment to make the LSBs work on some type of fundraiser in place of the town halls is one of those ways, because it would show that not only are we trying to, you know, set expectations for the station, but we're also trying to help them financially, especially since the elections have a big drain on the foundation. That's pretty much it. Thanks.
Thank you. Lydia?
Yes, and one of the things, because of what we just went through at KPFK with
the what ended up being partially, one can say, online, because the ballots had to be sent to the staff by email. And so their email addresses had to be reconfirmed as the ones that the station uses to communicate with them, which is what invited, you know, some of the opposition to the online voting for the general listenership. Addresses, home addresses change every 5 years. Email addresses change every year. And so your home address is the best way to identify that's who this is going to. With a staff election, it's different because the programmers are regularly communicated to by whoever's in charge of their program, if it's a collective, by the program director, etc. So there is some means of confirming that those email addresses belong to those people. But that's a far more difficult task with the listeners. But so I would support with the e-election for the staff, but not yet for the listeners. but what I was going to say was, in terms of moving the dialogue forward, I think we're kind of going in circles. And as much as I, John and I are on a local governance committee, and we can talk freely and for a long period of time, but I think if everybody else has exhausted their comments in terms of the first and second go-arounds, that maybe we could live by ending the meeting early.
Is that a motion to adjourn?
That is.
Okay.
If no one else wants to have any other comments.
Okay, so
John, to the queue for a 10-second announcing.
Well, let me, so Lydia wants to make a motion to adjourn if no one else wants to speak. John, I gather you want to speak. I thought I heard someone else speaking. I'm sorry, who was that?
Marcel,
okay. So I'm gonna let Marcel and John speak, and actually anyone else who wants to. But then we'll see whether there's really more to be said, or we simply need to adjourn, and or perhaps take up our poll suggestion of a work group. Again, Marcel.
I just wanted to go back to our poll suggestion of a work group. That's all.
Okay, John.
You asked why people are against online voting. The answer, I think, is obviously potential for voting fraud. And I'm a computer guy, and you can get in all kinds of arguments about how safe it isn't. But the fact is, most of us can't tell whether or not it's safe or not. The reason people are afraid of online voting is because of the obvious potential of voting fraud. It's the same as with voting machines that the Republicans all sell to all the governments. So the answer to it is to have open voting where you just vote publicly, just like you do in a local board meeting. You put your hand up or you answer a roll call. You vote right out in the open. You just say who you're voting for, and then there's no possibility of fraud because you just write it all down. And if anybody gets it wrong, you just tell the secretary, you got my vote wrong, or I changed my vote or whatever. And within a certain period of time, you eliminate the possibility of vote fraud by making it completely open and transparent. And that handles the fear of online voting.
Let me just say to that, I thought that, in fact, 2 years back, the National Election Supervisor had put in place a suggestion, we didn't take it up, but for having the listeners vote, which was essentially foolproof. You got a number, you knew what the number was, your vote was, everybody's vote, in fact, was tallied according to that number and publicly displayed. Your ballot was publicly displayed. If it was mailed in, it was scanned in. If you did it on the internet, you filled in a form, and the form was there. And all of the ballots could be looked at, and you could look to see whether your ballot was counted and so on. So it seems to me that the fear of fraud is way overblown. Anyway, I would certainly like to see us do it for listener elections, and I think we already had one in place, which really could have answered most.
I agree.
Some fears about it. Where do we want to go from here? I'll just take suggestions from that. There isn't any motion on the floor. Do we want to just adjourn? Do we want to do something to create a a follow-up task force or an action group, or basically I would suggest if there are people who would like to do that, that they volunteer. As far as I can tell, this committee will persist in it with its present membership up till next month. I suppose some of the OSBs might meet and replace some of the people from the LSBs, but the PNB certainly won't change anyone until they meet sort of towards the end of February. Where would you like to go from here? I'll just put it like that. Any suggestions? We have Lydia's suggestion to adjourn. Is there any opposition to adjourning? Okay, I hear none. So I'm going to declare the meeting adjourned. I want to thank you all for the conversation. I think it was useful.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.